TheDigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, Show 108, Thursday, 18th of May 2007. To the Media Centre Show, The Orb Networks. I'm Ian Dixon. This week on the show, Andrew Van Til joins me to talk about his Media Centre utilities. One of those is the DVR MS Toolbox, which is a Media Centre Show award winner, and it's a great tool for processing recording TV files and has a whole range of features. We're talking about ad skipping, tuner sharing, and also his other Media Centre applications as well. So looking forward to a good chat with Andrew. Have email, news items, and a chance to win my book using Microsoft Windows Vista Media Center. So first to the email, and this is from Anthony. Hi Ian, I continue to impress with your show, and it remains one of the only podcasts that I never miss. Your show has encouraged me to continue to explore the Media Center, and now I have my home network with the following components: one XP Media Center with 160 gig drive, one Vista Home Premium 64-bit with a terabyte and a touchscreen, two Xbox 360s, three LCD screens. I also had the house hardwired up to support this configuration. If nothing else, Microsoft has definitely benefited from me listening to your show. I have come across the unusual problem with Vista computer that I would appreciate some help from yourself or fellow listeners. I moved all my music across to Vista, about 13,000 songs, and connected up my iPod to this system as well. Recently, song titles started appearing twice in both Media Center and Media Player, although they refer to the same file. I have rebuilt the Media Player library, but this has not changed the problem. Is there an easy solution for this? Finally, I have not been able to determine whether I need to maintain iTunes and Media Player with the Vista operating system. I would be happy to do away with iTunes if the iPod could sync directly with Media Player. I know this is not possible with XP operating system. Looking forward to your continued great podcast. Best wishes from Anthony in Australia. Thanks for the email, Anthony. I do like getting emails in. I've not come across the problem that you described. I think the obvious thing to try would be to delete your library and sort of re-index it, but it sounds like you've done that already. So I'd be interested to hear if any other listeners have got any suggestions on that. Also, the suggestion of the iTunes as well. I must admit, I'm not the biggest fan of iTunes, so if there's a way of just being able to sync directly with Windows Media Player, that sounds great. So we're looking for listeners to help out with that one, and I'm going to get back on track the bundle to win MC Tunes and Pamela the Digital Assistant for Skype, and I'm going to be giving those away each week for email of the week, and if you send a tip in, then that's one of the things you'll get. So send your email in to ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Now a message from the blog. Hello Ian, I see you're a great believer and user of the Xbox 360 in a MC extender role, presumably connected to a HD TV display. One of the things I would like to see you address, can we ask Microsoft, is why we cannot run the extender in 720p 50Hz mode. It only allows 720p 60Hz mode when running as an extender. This is very poor. I'm sure you must notice, if you watch any sport like football, Formula 1, or anything with a lot of horizontal movement, then the picture is very jerky. For a great example, try the BBC News 24 or Sky News with their tickers across the bottom of the screen. A large portion of Europe has 50Hz PAL as their standard. Why does Microsoft ignore us and not allow this refresh rate when running extender mode? The 360 is clearly capable of 720p 50Hz. Indeed, DVD playback is 576p 50Hz. This is one of the main reasons why I'm not using an Xbox 360 as an extender. Yours sincerely, Simon. Thanks for the comment, Simon. I must admit, I've kind of got used to it now. I've been using the 360 as an extender since early last year. So I've really got used to that. But I do understand what you mean. There is a much more fluid picture when I use my TV's inbuilt digital tuner through Media Center. I must admit, you don't really tell it watching standard broadcast, but you do see it on some of the sporting events. So I'll be interested to hear whether anybody has got any comments on this, or is there indeed, you know, is there a workaround? Is there a reason for this, a technical reason for this? And I'd be interested to hear anybody else's suggestions. So send your suggestions in, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, or via the show blog. Link for that in the show notes, so you can put a comment straight on there. You can do it on my MSM Spaces blog, or on the blog on thedigitallifestyle.com. And like I said, I'll be giving away the MC Phone Pamela's bundle for email of the week. Now to a couple of news items from around the web. First, web guide's been updated, and this is via Mission Remote. Doug Barrett has added DVD streaming to web guide, and the quote from Mission Remote is, "If there's a video TS folder or a mountable ISO image, it will treat it as a DVD full with streaming with chapters." And that's for an encrypted DVD, so it could be your home ones or other DVDs that you've got that are unencrypted. I think it's a great idea. It really adds to WebGuide's arsenal of great features. I'm really impressed with that, so I'm going to give that a try. And I am a big fan of WebGuide, as I've said on the show before, and we've had Doug Barrett on the show in the past. So it's another way of getting new content wherever you want it. So congratulations, Doug, for producing such an excellent product. This week I got to play with Mobileware Big Screen Photos 2. This is a Vista Media Center application that enables you to browse Flickr pictures. And you may have seen version 1 last year, which was a WPF application. V2 is a true Media Center application written in Media Center markup language. And there's a lot of great features added to V2, such as geo-browsing, slideshows, and those kind of things. But the user interface is fantastic. It looks very much like a native part of Media Center, but with Mobileware's own sort of look and feel. But it's very smooth, very slick interface. I've just started playing with it, so I'll report back when I've had some more time with it. It's a great application. There's a link in the show notes to have a look at the blog post I did, and have a look at Niall's blog post. And I think it may be time to get him back on the show. I mentioned earlier on about Xbox 360 as an extender. If you're using the 360 extender, since the spring update for the Xbox 360, you can actually boot your Media Center straight into. You can actually boot your Xbox 360 straight into Media Center, which is a great idea for people like me who predominantly use the Xbox 360 as an extender. Basically, all you have to do is go into the dashboard, go to System Blade, Console Settings, Startup, and there's three options. There's Dashboard, Disk, and the new option, Media Center. So just select Media Center, and then the next time you power your Xbox up with the power button on the front panel, or by pressing the guide button on, pressing holding the guide button on the controller, it'll fire Media Center straight up. I think that's a nice time-saving thing, and it's what helps with, you know, if with the Wi-Fi acceptance factor, and for the kids and everything else, if they can just switch it on. I know I've had a couple of comments, people have said that you could do this already if you press the green button on the remote control. But I like this way, because just the way my Media Center box is out of line of sight, I tend to use the controller, the Xbox 360 controller, to control Media Center. So this is a great way of me being able to launch that. Thanks to Michael Creasy for the tip, and if you want some more details on that, link in the show notes. Saw an interesting article on the Media Center Sandbox blog, pointing to an article on coding for fun, where it demonstrates how to use Windows Mobile 5 device to control Windows Media Center. And I had a quick look through it. It looks a great article. Basically, it uses the Media Center SDK, the Windows Mobile SDK, and you can use Visual Basic or C#. And it takes you step by step. Creating a Media Center presentation layer, creating the add-in to sort of to be the receiver end of the solution, and then actually developing the mobile client for the Windows Mobile 5 device. It's a very complete sample application with C# and VB code, which is nice to have the VB code there for us VB developers. And since I've got my Windows Mobile Trio 750 now. That looks interesting for me, but it's really there to show you how to do these things, and the links to all the bits of SDKs that you need as well. So it's a really good complete article, and if you've got any interest in Media Center development, and if you're a fan of mobile development, then check that out, because it offers a nice set of instructions on how to do that, and obviously it's great to be able to control your Media Center using say your Wi-Fi network or Bluetooth from your pocket PC phone or your Windows mobile phone. Finally this week, I wanted to mention Embedded Automation's announcement that M-Control will support Windows Home Server. As we talked about M-Control plenty of times on the show in the past, this is the home automation software for Media Center, and they're actually producing an add-in for Windows Home Server that enables you to install M-Control as a home server add-in, administer M-Control using the home server console. It allows you to sort of serve up the client to Media Center clients such as Windows Vista and XP. So this is sort of the hub of the home automation system. You install the M-Control on your home server, and then the other devices can then control that. So you can still, through your Media Center, control your home automation, but the actual core of the component installed on home server, which, as we've said before about home server, is meant to be this device that's always on, so it makes sense to put that there. I'm going to get some more details on that from Embedded Automation's Ted Singh, but the initial press release is just out, so check out the link in the show notes, and I'll try and bring you some more information on that when I've given it a try. You can keep up with the latest news via my blog. As I said, I've got an MSM Spaces blog, and the blog is also on digitallifestyle.com. The link's for that in the show notes. And last week I mentioned about giving away a copy of my book using Microsoft Windows Vista Media Center. And thanks to Microsoft, I've got some extra bits to give away. Basically what we're going to be giving away is a signed copy of the book. Signed if you want it signed, you don't have to. A Microsoft Windows Live USB memory stick, a Vista mouse mat, and a Vista wireless rechargeable mouse, and a Vanishing Point t-shirt. And thanks to Microsoft for giving me some of these bits to give away. The wireless mouse is really neat, especially if you're a mobile user, you know, a laptop or a tablet PC. The wireless mouse is a really small device, and the receiver is actually pops out from the mouse itself, so that when you're carrying it around with you, you can put the receiver in the mouse and you won't lose your receiver. It's a really nice thing, rechargeable, everything. And to win this selection of goodies, all you have to do is send an email with your favourite feature of Windows Media Center, and I'll draw a winner at random. So send your email to ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I'm going to keep this open for a few weeks, so keep them coming in. And like I said, you can win this great bundle of prizes plus the book as well. And I mentioned the book. If you have purchased the book, please let me know. I want to hear from you, hear what you think, and get your feedback. Right, now time for a break, and I'll be back with Andrew.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MCEach Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit, allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Andrew, welcome to the Media Center Show.
Thanks.
Hi. Your applications that you've developed have been nominated multiple times on the Media Center Show Awards, and the one that most people will know of is the DVR MS Toolbox. But before we dive into that and find out about that application, could you give us your background and how you got into doing this development?
Well, I'm a professional developer. I've been doing that for almost 9 years now. And in the course of, I've been working with the Microsoft stack for most of that time, and during that time I went to the Microsoft Technology Center to work on a proof of concept for something I was doing for work. And one of the Microsoft guys there told me about how I could, you know, use Media Center. And of course back then it was OEM only or on MSDN, and I just happened to have an MSDN subscription, so I downloaded it and checked it out, and I loved the platform and just started going from there.
And that's funny you mentioned the MSDN. I think there'll be a lot of listeners that who've been using Media Center for a while now has probably got Media Center through the MSDN subscription.
Yeah. Well, it's for development and testing purposes only, so I was happy to develop and test it for Microsoft.
So the reason why you started, you thought you could do this, because you're already developing using Microsoft technologies.
Yeah.
You could see that using Media Center was, you know, was an extension of that, and you could work for Media Center.
Yeah, and there was a lot of things that, I mean, it was a great product to begin with, but there were some things that weren't exactly the way that I wanted it to be, and when they published an SDK, I think it was with 2004, maybe, and I just started working with it. And I think the first thing I wrote was a tool to kind of save the position in a video file, so that I could, you know, because when you stop it, there's no way to go back to it if you, like, turn off Media Center. So it was just a way to, like, get back to that space, so it behaved more like a TV file and less like a WMV file.
From judging from what the applications that you've written, you seem to like the sort of like less of the sort of the user interface presentation stuff, and more on sort of the tool stuff. So is that what originally driven you to the Media Center development? Was you found these things, you know, like you said, the safe position thing, were just missing, and you thought you could you wanted to extend it for that reason?
Well, I mean, professionally, I'm not a GUI developer. I can't design worth anything. So part of it is just a process of natural selection. Like, I'm not good at that. So the tools that I tend to build are more background tools. And, like, in that case, it was just something that, a feature that just wasn't there that I really wanted. Because it was kind of annoying, you know, to fast forward halfway through an hour show just because I had to turn off the Media Center to, like, go eat dinner or something like that.
And so, and when you were going doing the development back in those sort of early SDK, what you found were the biggest challenges when you were starting out?
I think it was really just like the lack of samples at that time, and then also, I mean, this is even an issue that I have now, is that the SDK and the Media Center platform is really designed around adding new experiences to Media Center. Like, you know, like the My Movies thing, or you know, these other applications that add an entirely new way of doing something into Media Center to extend it. But if you want to extend the current experience, it's a lot more difficult. And I mean, I think that some of the reason why that's an issue for me is because that's what I'm trying to do. Like with the DBMS toolbox, one of the things that it does is the automatic commercial skipping, and that's all about extending the experience while you're watching TV. And some of that stuff just isn't intended to be part of the platform, I think. And so that's where there's a lot of pain for me.
Right. So, yeah. So building new applications or a total new experience, the SDK sort of helps you with, but extending it, existing things, like you said, with the TV, then that's where it's hard, more of a challenge.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's interesting, because one of the previous shows talked to Microsoft's Charlie Owen, and one of the things that we started up on the show is the Ask Charlie, and Charlie's doing a lot more interactive stuff, and he's actually been asking for questions. So I guess that's one of the areas that we should ask the Media Center team, is, you know, how they can improve the SDK for developers who want to extend the experience rather than creating whole new ones.
That would be perfect.
Well, I know that Charlie listens, so that's one for Charlie, really. Developers want to be able to hook into that. Now, you mentioned DVR-MS Toolbox, and this is definitely one of the main applications I wanted to talk to you about, because this is probably the most, one of the most downloaded sort of utilities for Media Center, and it always does well on the show awards, as I mentioned before. So first of all, what is DVR-MS Toolbox?
The original concept was just a collection of tools that do stuff to the DVR-MS files that Media Center creates. You can do a great number of things, like converting the DVR-MS files to WMV, to all kinds of other formats. Like right now, there's a bunch of folks who are using DVR-MS Toolbox to hook into MCoder to convert it for like iPod and DivX and Xvid. And because of the way that it's structured, it's really easy to take these actions, which are the things that do the interesting stuff, and just order them however you want them to be ordered, so that you can. So it's really up to the individual user on how they want something to happen and chain these actions together to get the result that they want. So, like, for example, like my brother-in-law lives in the UK, and he really likes baseball. And so during the World Series, I set up a profile in DVR-MS Toolbox to, you know, record the show, scan it for commercials, cut out the commercials, convert it to a WMV file, move it to an FTP server that I have in my basement, so that every day he could just go there and, like, you know, log into the server and download the WMV file without all the commercials in it.
Right. So it's that kind of batch processing then that it may, as well as, like, we'll come back to the commercial skipping, but the batch processing element of it is, it sounds like it makes it really useful.
Well, it's not technically batch processing. It's it detects, like, there's a file watcher. One of the applications that come with it is a file watcher service, so it just detects changes in the recording TV folder in Media Center, so that when the file's done, it can run with it. Although you can, because the EXE that does the actual work is a command line utility, so you can create like a CMD or a bat file to do that, and some people do that with like a scheduled task.
Right. So I mean that's it. Opens up an interesting possibility then with Windows Home Server, which I'm currently beta testing, that I've got the two machines and my Media Center PC records all the content, and then I'm using the Windows Home Server for storage, and I've got some TV files on there. But then using this application, I could get it to scan for commercials, take those out, and then move the TV files onto the Windows Home Server. Am I right in thinking that's possible?
Oh, yeah. And I have two Media Centers in my house, but I only have one set-top box. So one of the other applications that I wrote kind of brokers conflicts to the other one, to the one that doesn't have the set-top box. And then I have profiles running on that one with DVR-MS Toolbox that, you know, detect the commercials and then move the file from that box to my file server in the house. And then that share on the file server is a watched folder for the Media Center upstairs.
Yeah, that's exactly the scenario I was thinking. I've got Windows Home Server, which is going to be storing all the TV files, and, like I say, have a watch folder on the other Media Center PCs can watch that. But so far I've kind of been manually moving things over, but this will seem an ideal solution for that.
Yeah, and that was, I guess, I like to be efficient with my time, and if there's a way to automate something that doesn't require user intervention, then that's a great thing for me. And so that was one of the things that was an original design consideration for the tool.
And you mentioned about converting as well. So you've got other options to do, say, edit the adverts, move the file, and save it as a WMV. So does that mean that you can kind of use it as your archiving tool then?
Yeah, you can. You can do lots of, like, pretty much anything that you can think of, you can use the tool to do. If a profile exists and an action exists for it, and there's a command line action too. So if you need a bat file to do something that's very specific to your environment, you can just encapsulate that logic in a command file or a bat file and have the toolbox execute that as part of the process as well.
And the converter then, is that something that's built into the tool, or do you download the separate conversion tools?
Some of the conversion is built into the tool. So like conversion to WMV, there's two ways that you can do that using the tool. One is it will invoke the DVRM or DVR to WMV DLL that is part of the DVR to WMV application. And then there's also a way to do that using just DVRM Toolbox will build the conversion graph in DirectShow for you using Intelligent Connect. And that works really great for folks who live in the States with NTSC files, but it doesn't work so well with like ATSC and PAL shows. So that's where you'd want to use like the DVR to WMV
right.
way of doing that. But it also, you can download FFD show because that's a direct show filter as well. And there's some actions built in that will use graphs in direct show to call FFD show to convert to things like DivX and XVID and H.264.
Right. So using this, then you can pick your format of choice and then use this tool just to watch the folder and automatically convert it, I guess.
Yeah.
And I suppose then you could, I mean, if you're on the go and you wanted to use something, you know, you're using an iPod video or a pocket PC or something like that, again, you could use this tool to convert it to the right format, the right bitrate and everything else and have it available for say your pocket PC to take the shows on the go with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually do that. There's one of the actions is a copy to pocket PC action. It uses Rappi to, you know, connect or to take the file and just move it to your pocket PC when it's done. So every night I just plug my pocket PC phone into my media center and it takes some shows that record overnight that I want to watch on the train on my way into work in the morning, and it just takes those shows, cuts out the commercials, converts it to a pocket PC format WMV, and then just copies it directly onto the SD card that's in the pocket PC. So in the morning, I just send them
right. That's really a good idea. I mean, I suppose one of the other things that it could do then is over in the UK on the Freeview with the DVB-T signal that we get some radio stations and. So some quite good shows on there, and I record them, and then you've got to, you know, separate the audio out from the video. So could I use this then to strip out the video, convert it to say MP3, and put that on my pocket PC or my iPod or whatever device I want?
Oh yeah, there's a WMA conversion action, and then there's also a an MP3 action as well that uses the lame direct show filter to do the actual conversion.
Right, that's again, then I could automate that so that I could listen to those shows, you know, like you've done, publish those shows straight to my phone and take those with me as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's a really good idea. And I guess then that it could also work with other devices, like I've just recently bought an ultramobile PC, so I could have that on my network and I could use this tool again to send some shows over, to convert them and send them over to the PC and then take that with me, and then I've got my shows with me that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
The commercial skipping features, I mean, that sounds really interesting, and when I first read about that, I was amazed that you could get that to work. So, first of all, what does it actually do?
Well, the commercial skipping, there's two things that need to be set up. One is that you need to have the file watcher application running so that it kind of the show starts and or ends. And then there's two applications that you can use that come with the tool that scan the DVRMS files for where the commercials are. One of them is ComSkip, which is an open source free application. And then the other one is Show Analyzer, and Show Analyzer is $10. The biggest difference between the two is that Show Analyzer works on files as they are being recorded, so you can start watching the show and get commercial skipping right away. You don't have to wait till it's done. And then they also, you can tune both of them, but Show Analyzer is a little bit easier to tune. It comes with a nice GUI tool that kind of shows you where the commercials are, and you can figure out pretty easily where that is. And so the file watcher, when the show starts recording, if you're using a show, commercial scanning right away, and then produce an XML file that contains the locations of the commercials within the show. And then the commercial skip add-in runs as part of the Media Center shell, and it uses the Media State Aggregation Service, or MSAS, to detect when playback begins, and then also the current position in the file, and uses that position to say, you know, are we in a commercial, are we in a commercial, are we in a commercial every second. And then when it detects that you're within one of these spans of a commercial, it just skips you to the end of the, and so you just kind of watching the show, and you just, and there's different ways that you can control that experience from the add-in, like if you want to see like the blue play bar, if you want to turn that off, you can do all that stuff in the config tool. And so it produces a really seamless way of just like watching the show without commercials, and commercially accurate. Like I use Show Analyzer personally, and it's usually about 90-95% accurate. And then where, of course, where it's not, you can just go in and configure it to, you know, create a particular profile for a channel. Like if they don't have like the little bug or the logo in the bottom right hand corner, you may need to change it a little bit. Or if you're on a channel that, like if you're watching soccer, the commercials are about, you know, much much longer, like 15 minutes, a lot longer than the usual commercials in the US, so you want to create like a profile just for that channel.
Right, so the intelligence sort of the intelligence that works out how the commercial or where the commercials are, what kind of algorithms does that use then to determine what the position of them?
To get the definitive answer, you'd have to talk to the guys who wrote ComSkip or Show Analyzer. But from what I understand, like Show Analyzer kind of looks for the black frames in between the segments of a show. Because usually, like, there's a commercial, then there's like a black frame or a series of black frames before the show starts. And then it also uses the bug or the logo that you see on a lot of channels, at least in the States. You see like the CBS or, you know, that little guy in the bottom right hand corner that says this is a show. And then I know that ComSkip uses that as well, because you can configure ComSkip to write that to a text file, so you can look to see if it got the right thing.
Right, I see. So it looks for that logo, and then when the adverts are on, the commercials are on, the logo's gone, so it knows that's when the commercials are.
Yeah, and then also in HD files, there's almost always a change in aspect ratio between, like, the commercials are not in HD, or the 16:9, where the show usually is. So that's another thing that the tool that scans for commercials can look for as well.
That sounds really interesting. And then does that work on any format, or is it, does it work best with NTSC or ATSC, and, you know, or which PAL supported?
I believe that it works with PAL as well. So I haven't heard. I would think that somebody would have told me if it didn't work in for the rest of the world. So
sure, yeah.
I think that it does. Not that long ago, ATSC files didn't work that well, but with recent versions of both tools, ATSC files work just fine.
Right, and I see, and the idea of your program, the toolbox, is that these are all just kind of like almost like adding modules, and it's just another option. So you could convert it, you can move it, and you can cut out the commercials as an additional module.
Right.
So in terms of sort of the end user experience, you find that does it pass the wife acceptance factor?
Yeah, even better than that, like it passes my kids' acceptance. Like when we go to other places where we don't have this, they're like, "What are these commercials?" Or can you skip this for me? And it just, they don't even really notice. And I think that's one of the things that really I really like about it, is that, like, I don't know how commercials are in the rest of the world, but commercials in the States on the kids shows are just really intrusive. You know, it's trying to sell them like Barbie dolls and McDonald's and things like that, and for them not to see that is just great for me.
Yeah, a definite benefit. I agree with that. It'd be interesting to see what the TV companies make of this, because I guess that they're getting used to the fact that people skip the commercials through TiVos and media centres by, you know, fast-forwarding them, but having it automated is another thing entirely.
Yeah, that's completely true. I think that Replay TV got sued out of business over that issue over here a couple of years back. But there has been a lot of legal stuff going on about how it's completely legal to completely skip commercials if you want to, because I mean the content sits on your PVR and there's really no difference between you know, fast forwarding or getting up and walking to a different room or just having a piece of software do it for you.
Yeah, I can't force you to watch something. You know, you can put your fingers in your ears and have your eyes shut if you really want.
Exactly.
It doesn't seem really enforceable that they should do that. I mean, it's just like it's the rest of the show. And if you want to skip, you're watching a football match, you want to skip 10 minutes. You want to skip 10 minutes. You don't want to be told what you can and can't do with it. So I suppose the commercials fit in the same category.
Right, exactly.
But it's interesting to see how as applications like this become more mainstream, whether they change the way they do their advertising to accommodate.
Well, I think that there's a lot of things that as media becomes more digital and less centralized, there are going to have to be a lot of changes in the business model. I mean, the music industry is resisting that right now, but it's almost like the market has shifted, so the companies have to adapt or something bad is going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. But this, I mean, from an end user's point of view, this is just a fantastic application. It's just another benefit of using Media Center is that not only do you get all the content there and you can watch it when you want and where you want, you can also have the commercials automatically skipped, and plus all the transcoding and moving about and everything else. It just really, you know, it increases the flexibility that Media Center offers you.
Yeah, it's the great thing about owning the platform that you consume your TV on. I think that's one of the major differences between something like Media Center, where you can do this because it's a PC, and something like a TiVo, where it's really it's a consumer electronics appliance that sits in your house that you have no control over. You can't run code on it. You can't install things. You can't mess with the files. You're really limited to what the intent of the developer for that consumer electronics device wanted when they sold it to you. You can't do with it as you will after now that you bought it, now that you own it, because you don't really own
and,
it.
And they're also much, I suppose, more vulnerable to pressures by the content industry. So, for example, TiVo may feel that it's not a good idea to include an automatic commercial skipping just because of the problems that would cause, whereas you as an independent developer, you know, on a platform like Media Center can develop something like this.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's free, too, so, like, I don't really make any off of it, and it's also open source, so even if for whatever reason, you know, I wasn't able to work on it anymore, the code's out in the wild, so somebody else could pick it up and share it and do things with it.
Yeah, that's a nice thing. It helps the community, and the plugins that you're using as well, a lot of them are either free or open source or fairly low cost as well.
Yeah.
And you've developed other applications for Media Center as well as the DVR-MS Toolbox, which, just to say, like you just mentioned, is free, and I'll include a link from the show notes for anybody to get going and start downloading that. When I was doing this sort of research and looking through some of the applications you've written, you mentioned the Recording Broker. What's that application?
That is something that I was thinking about. Like, one of the shortcomings, I think, in the Media Center platform is that it's very standalone. Like, there's no really good way to make your media centers talk to other media centers. So I was thinking about that one day, and this is one of the things that came as like recording conflicts from one media center to another over an IP network. So like I mentioned before, I have two media centers, one that sits in my basement, one that sits in the main living room area. And each one has a single tuner. So if there's a recording conflict on the main computer, if I wanted to to kind of resolve that manually into the set it up, but I'd much rather have that solution be automated. So I just, it's a little service, or a Windows service that sits on both machines and runs periodically to detect recording conflicts, and then it just sends a message over the network to the other media center and tries to other PC. But and it, I guess one of the cool things is because it works over IP networks, you should be able to set up a network with anybody you can reach on an IP network, which is anybody on the internet. So you could theoretically, and I haven't tested this, but it was designed with this in mind. Like it uses the TCP channels in .NET to do the communication. So it should work where, you know, if you have a friend or a group of friends and you guys all just want to try to cover each other's conflicts, you should be able to set that up. And one of the things that you can do is there's a secret that signs each of these messages, and it's, you know, configurable in a little GUI tool that comes with it, so that if the message doesn't, if the secret doesn't match on all of the machines, then, you know, so nobody can send you like a malicious recording request. Although, I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen is, you know, you record something that you didn't really intend to.
So it maliciously makes you record the soap operas.
Yeah.
I could see that being an issue.
There's a version for XP and a version for Vista, because the way that you detect recording conflicts is slightly different between the two versions. So it's just to make sure that you get, if somebody would download it, that they get the right one.
So to get this straight then, so I've got two media center PCs, to make it simple, on the LAN, both with TV cards. And let's say that, you know, they've got dual tuners in. And on one of the machines, I try to record a third program. With the service running, it can, the resolution will be that one machine will record two of them, and the third one will be picked up by the other machine. Is that right?
Yes.
You wouldn't have to touch the third machine because it's all done automatically.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's turned on, and there is some logic where, like, if it can't contact the other machine, it'll, you know, try again later. But as long as it's on and you can send the request over the network to it, yeah, it'll just schedule it for you and it'll get recorded on the other machine.
And then does that remove the conflict sort of message within the first media center machine, so you know that the conflict has been resolved?
Yes.
Excellent, because I mean that's such a good idea, because like you said, there is, you know, when you've got multiple media center machines, one of the areas that you kind of is on the weak side is the fact that these aren't really don't talk to each other, but this is a way of pulling the tuners. It seems a really efficient way of doing things, because I'm sure there are lots of people with multiple machines with multiple tuners in.
Well, especially now that, you know, with Vista coming out, where, you know, pretty much everybody who has a Vista machine is going to have Windows Media Center on it. And some of those machines are going to come with tuners, or they're going to see, like, what's this Windows Media Center thing, and they're going to, oh, you know, I can watch TV here, slap a tuner in it. So I think it's going to be a lot bigger of an issue, this, you know, the multiple media centers not talking to each other, as Vista becomes more prevalent in the marketplace.
And then, because it's not, like you said before, it's not just for two machines. You can have more than one. So how many machines can you have sort of in the pool?
Any number of machines. And you order the list of machines, and if it can't contact or it can't schedule it on one of the machines, it just goes to the next one, and it'll keep trying until it finds one that will accept the recording request.
That's excellent. So if you're really into your TV, your only limit really is the number of PCs that you want in the house. And like you said, you can also team up with the people over the internet. So if you've got, let's say, a group of friends, you can make sure that you've got every episode of the show recorded between you.
Yeah. In the future, I hope to make it smart enough so that if you have, like, I have a set-top box in the PC, or the media center in my living room, and so it gets a different, like, a larger set of channels than the one that just has basic cable in the basement. So if it can't get resolve the conflict over the like the basic cable set, then it would try to figure out if the recording that's actually causing the conflict, the one that has priority, if it's in that, if it can be scheduled on the basic channel, basic cable set on the other PC. But it doesn't do that now, but that's something that, depending on, you know, interest and how much time I get to mess with it, that I'd really like to figure out with it.
I mean, this sounds like it's extremely powerful, but, you know, has it taken a long time to develop this? Because it does sound something that's pretty complex.
Actually, no. It was something I did in, like, a day.
Amazing.
after figuring it all out, like, the hardest part about figuring it out is that it uses stuff that isn't part of the SDK to figure out where the conflicts are.
Yeah.
So most of the time went into researching how to figure out where conflicts are in Media Center. So, but after that, I mean, it's just very, very simple. Like, you know, you figure out what the conflicts are, and then you just send a message across the network, and then actually scheduling the show is really easy because that's part of the SDK. It's documented with the click to record, and
right.
So given that, the real work was just in figuring out where the conflicts are.
And of course, this is where you going back to what you said at the beginning, because you're running .NET on Windows, you can use your .NET skills to develop this.
Right.
I mean, and combining this with the toolbox as well, I guess that you can then, after they've been recorded, move them all back around again, so that really, as an end user, you don't care which machine it's on, which machine it's been recorded on. You just go to your machine, you know, set what you want it to record, and the content's there. It's the sort of the where it and when is sort of totally relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a very powerful network solution. I guess that this is something that sort of the AV installation guys must be interested in, because you know that they're a lot of them are looking at the big multi-machine installations as opposed to the sort of the single enthusiast with all a single PC. So I guess this is something that must be getting a lot of interest from them.
Well, nobody's contacted me about it yet, but if anybody's interested, they can always, you know, just contact me through my website or send me an email or.
Certainly, if I was an integrator, this is one of the things I'd be looking at, because it just offers this sort of power that, you know, is way beyond anything a set-top box could offer.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just another extension, a natural extension of the fact that all this stuff just runs on a PC, and you can just do so much with it because you have all that flexibility to write your own software.
I really like that idea, and that's definitely I'm gonna have a look at it myself. I don't have that multi-tuning situation, but you know, I think that's just such an interesting idea, and it's all about sort of the digital home, and it brings it all together. So I really like the idea of that one. Is that a relatively new application?
Yeah, it was. I just released it.
So you're interested in sort of getting feedback and comments on that?
Yeah, well, I'd like to get feedback on everything, because really, like, if I just kept all this stuff to myself, it would never go anywhere, because a lot of the ideas about, you know, converting for DBMS toolbox, like how the add-in, the commercial skipping add-in should work, how what format should be supported, you know, and a lot of the things that it does have come from people saying, you know, I'd really like it if it did this, where if I just kind of like kept it to myself, it would never have happened. I would have never written something that did that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the community feedback is what helps, you know, what drives a better product. Plus, it also gives you that incentive to carry on working on it, because if you're not getting any feedback, you kind of feel, you know, if no one's using it, then there isn't the same incentive for you personally to carry on pushing sort of the boundaries with it.
Right.
So I recommend.
Well, and it's fun for me too. Like, this is my hobby. Like, how I blow off steam is I write this stuff. So it's just a good way for me to, you know, take other people's ideas and have fun with it.
Yeah, definitely. But your applications don't just stop there. There's a couple others that you've got as well, isn't there? What's the LCD writer application?
That is, it's like I have a vacuum fluorescent display on the mm-hmm. one of my media centers, and it's just an application that writes the media center state to that LCD or that vacuum fluorescent display that is on the PC, so you can see like what you're watching, if you're recording a show, if you're writing a DVD or a CD, like reports all that status information that, that Media Center publishes to that front panel.
Right, so that's, I find that kind of thing useful, especially if you're, you're not got your display on. I use extenders, so Xbox 360 extenders. So the media center PC is in the corner of the room with the screen switched off. So that would be good for me to be able to see it's recording and or it's finished burning or all that kind of information.
Yeah. Oh, like one of the reasons why I wrote it is that there's other applications that do this. Like Front View is one, and I always used that before. But none of those applications have the recording. So, like, if it's recording something or what channel it's recording on. And so, like, my wife would change the channel in the middle of a recording because she didn't know that the Media Center was recording something. So, but now it, like, has that status on the front of it. So, you know, she can look at it to say, oh, you know, it's recording something or it's not recording something. So it's okay to, like, go watch something on demand.
Hmm. Well, that's a really good idea. And what kind of displays does it support?
Right now it only supports... the Hitachi, I think it's HD44780 compatible display. It's the kind that I have. It's, I think most of the parallel port type vacuum fluorescent displays are compatible with that standard. But over the weekend, I rewrote it to work with Vista because it didn't work with UAC turned on before, and one of the things that I changed about it was now pretty much anybody who has a display can write a DLL, a .NET assembly that adheres to the interface that I use to write the status to the actual display and implement their display specific logic in that, and then the tool can, you can just configure it to say use this display writer instead of the one that comes with it.
Ah, that's good. Because I've got a matrix orbital display, and so I don't have that kind of thing. I use it for sort of other weather and news and RSS and that kind of thing. So if they implemented the DLL and put the hooks into it, they could sort of offer that support.
Yep.
Oh, that sounds really good. Because I really like the idea of seeing that Media Center's recording, because like I said, I have my screen switched off the majority of the time, so it's handy to know that, you know, not to panic if you know your programs, especially your wife's programs recording or whatever. Well, that's a really neat application. And the other one is that I wanted to mention is the YAC client. And I think I mentioned this one on the show quite a long while ago. What's that about?
Well, YAC is it's a tool that detects caller ID information, and it will publish the caller ID information to any YAC client that's on your network. YAC's I think it's a GPL or, you know, new public license application that's free, and you just run it on the machine that has your caller ID modem, and they publish this, like, the standard on what you need to implement to have a YAC client. And so this is just a YAC client that runs on PCs in your network, like, and it has a Media Center add-in as well. So, like, I don't have a phone line where I have my main PC. So I have the phone line where my server is. So I just put the caller ID modem in the server, and then I run YAC on the server, and then it publishes caller ID information across all the machines on my network, so that when the phone rings, I can, and if I'm in front of a PC, it just tells me who's calling.
So that goes across the other PCs, plus there's a Media Center UI if you're in Media Center.
Right.
Excellent idea. I mean, I know I think it was quite on one of the early shows I actually talked about it, but it's a good idea. You know, it's a really good idea to get to make use out of it. But one of the issues I've always had in the past is that my PC is nowhere near where the phone line is. So this gets around that. If you've got another PC near the phone line, is you can sort of get around that situation.
Yeah,
and I suppose especially interesting for Vista, because there's no sort of the caller ID kind of stuff seems to have sort of disappeared out of there now.
Yeah, and I wrote my laptop too, so that, you know, I don't have to be anywhere close to where a phone line is, or even if I'm in the backyard, I can see who's calling so I can know if I need to go run for the phone or not.
Yeah. Or at least, and you've got, I suppose you can log that as well, and you can see that, you know, to ring somebody back, you can see who's been calling you.
Mm-hmm.
That's another excellent application. That's another just a good use of Media Center and a way of extending its capabilities. So have you got any other applications on the go?
The only other application is the first one that I did for Media Center, which is the Media Bookmark. And it saves the current location inside of a video file using the media information that's present, like the title and subtitle and all that other stuff, before. But I'm not sure if it works anymore with that.
And if anybody wants to get hold of these applications, which I'm hopefully people will now they've heard the options that are available, but where's the best place to get hold of them?
The best place is to go to my website, which is bagavant.com, which is BABGVANT.com. And it's in the download section of the site.
And I've noticed on the site as well, there's a blog where you've got all sort of the latest news on your applications, and there's a forum on there as well.
Yeah, all the support stuff should go in the forum. Or if you have any feature requests or things like that, I read every post, so if there's something in there that isn't working for you, and I should know about it pretty quickly.
Excellent. Well, I mean, they sound really... really interesting applications, and it's all part of expanding the use of Media Center. So I think it's a definite benefit, and hopefully people check those out. And I'm certainly going to look at the tool to at least move the content around my home. So I'll be definitely downloading for that.
Great.
Many thanks for your time today. Then it's really great talking to you, and it's they are some great applications.
Oh, thanks for having me, and thanks for doing this. You add a lot of value to the community with your show.
That's very kind. Hopefully that's what I set out to do. Being part of the community and the Media Center community is a particularly good one, so I really do enjoy that.
Thanks.
Well, many thanks for your time today, and we'll see you on a future show, hopefully.
Great.
Thanks to Andrew. All the links for the stuff talked about in the show will be in the show notes. Don't forget about the book competition. So that's to win the book, Windows Live USB memory stick, Vista Mouse mat, wireless Vista Mouse, and a Vanishing Point t-shirt. To do that, you just send me an email in what your favourite feature of Windows Media Center is, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, and I'll keep that going for a couple of weeks. So I'll see you back here next week. Thanks very much for listening. I do appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you.